Turks, Hannah Cranston here with Hasan Piker and Brett Ehrlich for the third day in a row, Brett.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm talking crazy about his sweater and hat.
That's true.
Have you been wearing the same sweater and hat for 3 days now?
It looks good. If it ain't broke.
You know what would be worse than that, though? The only way it could be worse than me wearing the same thing 3 days in a row is if I had three of these sweaters. Like, what
well,
if
Mark
I did?
Mark Zuckerberg does that. He has like the same,
the
you know,
North
t-shirt.
Face
yeah, the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't doubt
maybe
it.
Maybe you could say like you're just saving your cognitive resources.
Yeah, exactly.
And on all of your articles of clothing, I think this is the least offensively ugly one. So I applaud and admire your efforts for redoubling your
yeah, for
clothing.
Sure. And what do I wear that's offensive to you?
I'm just messing with
you. All right, well, speaking of Mark Zuckerberg, we have a story about him today.
Oh, no.
We have a great story. My favorite story of the day is the fact that Steve Bannon took a selfie and it revealed his master plan on a whiteboard behind him. So we're gonna show you Steve Bannon's master plan by the end of the show. Be sure to tweet at us using the hashtag TYTLive with suggestions of what you wanna hear us talk about during today's post game for members. And I think that's all we have for, one announcement. Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so guys, we won a Webby because we're awesome, and also because you guys voted for it because it's a People's Voice or People's Choice Award.
People's Voice
and People's Choice.
My Webby usually says the ones People's that
Voice
we, on it.
Yeah, well, those are the ones that usually we win because we don't like the grease palms. But anyway, so we're going. And there's a 5-word acceptance speech that I need to give on behalf of the Young Turks. And I want to put it out there for the fans that helped us win the award. Just tweet at us, tweet at me at Hasan the Hun, tweet at the Young Turks with the hashtag TYTWebbies. And tell us what our 5-word suggestion should be.
Great idea.
Do they still
select randomly who gives the speech?
What do you mean?
So that. They do. It's weird. It's who gives it in public. You will be able to see Hasan's speech. It's just a matter of whether they pull this category.
That's why I wanted to announce it to our audience, because like it depends on how excited people are about it. And
I mean, if there's the awards,
I think everybody on this panel is extremely excited about it.
So I am.
Well, I mean,
it's a great idea.
Our PR people wanted me to do it.
I think it's a good idea because you get a lot of creative suggestions in 5 words.
I agree.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome. All right, let's jump into our first story here. The Justice Department has announced that they are closing the investigation into the two Baton Rouge police officers who were involved in the death of Alton Sterling last year. Now, basically, they have shut these he was shot multiple times, and he was immobile. They were pinning him down. They claimed that he had a gun. Take a look at the video here. So the Justice Department said they will not be bringing charges to those two police officers. And by the police account, officers Blaine Salamone and Howie Lake saw Sterling outside a convenience store in July after it was reported that a man had threatened someone there with a gun. Sterling, who was selling CDs outside the store, fit the description of that man. Now, both officers actually had body cameras, but the cameras were reportedly dislodged. Now, the U.S. Department of Justice will not press federal civil rights charges against the officers involved in the shooting, which leaves it up to local officials. Now, after this shooting obviously went viral, the video of the shooting went viral last year in July. There were a lot of protests right outside of the convenience store and around the country. And so officials are fearing that this news that they're not going to be pressing charges might have sort of consequences that are in the similar vein where protests will erupt. A lot of schools are notifying parents of their plans if protests erupt in Baton Rouge. Now, the case will actually be the first time under Attorney General Jeff Sessions that the department was publicly declined to prosecute officers investigated for possible wrongdoing in a high profile case. Now, this isn't a surprise since Sessions has also offered offered a tacit endorsement of what's known as the Ferguson effect, which refers to the contested idea that police might be afraid to get out of their cars and enforce the law for fear of ending up on viral video. Now, obviously, this is awful. I mean, that video is just horrendous. And no matter how many times you've seen it, I think it still shakes you to your core. And I think this is just another instance of our government telling people that Black lives don't matter. And this is really, really unfortunate. And it's sort of giving a go ahead for police to make these split decisions without facing any real repercussions.
Yeah, it sucks. Jeff Sessions is someone that I personally do not want in charge of dictating the legislative or the, you know, law enforcement agenda of the entire nation. And this is, yeah, it's the first time he's had to face this kind of decision. Mm-hmm. He has more, you know, coming down the pike. Eric Garner, Tamir Rice, and there's a 15-year-old kid in Dallas who got shot by police, and the police changed their story. And so these are the kinds of things when you look at a story like this, something that's been swirling in the ether, and you ask yourself, what can I do? It's just try to keep up the pressure on social media and elsewhere. Take to the streets and march. I mean, there have been spontaneous marches today over this.
And I genuinely don't understand how, I mean, look, let me just start off by saying this. We talk about white privilege sometimes, and it's almost like a trigger word for a lot of people that are alt-right that hate watch our show. But the reality is, Jeff Sessions is never going to understand what it's like for a black citizen to walk the streets and how fearful they are of police officers, because Jeff Sessions is an old white guy who's kind of racist. You know, grew up in a town, probably a smaller town, and he didn't have to experience that sort of systemic racism at all at any given point in his life. So that's why he can look at this issue and think about it from a police perspective. But the reality is, and we've talked about this over and over and over again, there's just simply no accountability. And if we're constantly talking about the argument on whether this is a Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter argument, rather than just this discriminatory practices and this insane use of excessive force that leads to the death of unarmed black people at a rate that's 5 times higher than white people, there's a serious problem that we need to talk about. But instead, we're just talking about the argument.
And I think you're right. It is excessive force. And you can tell that from this video. And constitutionally, there are two instances where police can actually use lethal force and they can shoot. So the first circumstance is to protect their life or the life of another innocent party, what departments call the defense of life standard. And the second circumstance is to prevent a suspect from escaping, but only if the officer has probable cause to think that the suspect poses a dangerous threat to others. And from that video, you can see that in that instance, Alton Sterling was not being a probable threat. And so these police officers, it looks like from the video, did something.
He had to reach into the guy's cargo short pocket to get the gun. Because the idea is, at the very end of the video that you saw, the police officer reaches into the pocket and removes some article, some item. Ostensibly, that's the gun. And if the police officer had to be in fear of their life at that moment, like, I would assume that the gun would have to be out, or he had to be reaching for it aggressively. What it seemed like happened to me was that they had him pinned down. An officer discovered the gun, yelled, "He's got a gun." Everyone lost their shit, even though possessing a gun in Baton Rouge is totally legal. And then it escalated from there, whether it was the struggling cop on the top hitting the other cop, who then, with his gun pointed directly at this man. And that there's no way that that can be the way you're supposed to do it.
Right.
And if it is, we need to change that. There's just so much else. But go ahead.
The legal ambiguity is what essentially the crux of the issue, right? It's the legal ambiguity that, like, you can't tell if the officer genuinely felt threatened or if the officer genuinely thought that this person was going to pose a threat to others if escaped. Mm-hmm. So that's a massive part of this problem, is that it's written within the legislation. Now, But what I'm saying is, we don't even have any sort of accountability. We still don't have body cams for all units. And even if we did have body cams for all police departments, they still get dislodged, or precincts will hold on to that footage until they deem that they can release certain parts of it. That happens pretty frequently. On top of that, like, I mean, without any layer of accountability, without independent review boards, for example, without any sort of new education, without inclusivity, this problem is going to continue to persist.
And the federal level is the hope, because a lot of times if it goes back to the same region where these police officers come from, then the attorneys that the police officers deal with every day in order to, in many cases deal with every day in order to prosecute what the police officers arrest, it's law and order. There's the police officers and then the lawyers who, you know, the district attorneys. And so there is an inherent possible conflict of interest because these people have to work with each other, have worked with each other before, and have to after. Now, it's not over. This is not said and done. While the federal government has decided, the federal justice system has decided they're not going to pursue it, it goes back to local law enforcement. So there is another round where this could potentially find the kind of solution that a lot of us are looking for. And one more thing about the accountability, the logic that's used by Jeff Sessions and other law and order, you know, justice advocates who say that there need to be, when they're saying we don't want to hold the police accountable, your argument all day, every day is we need higher punishments for criminals to deter them from doing negative acts. And so you need to have the same kind of accountability for law enforcement to deter them from doing negative acts.
That's a really good point.
Thank you, Hannah. Yes, I got one right.
That was really good.
Let's move on. So last month, it was revealed that Chechen authorities are rounding up gay men in the region, torturing them and keeping them in detainment camps. Now, one survivor who actually escaped these camps has a pretty scary tale to tell. He's anonymous in this video, but take a look.
Они говорят родителям убить своего ребенка. Типа, или вы это сделаете, или это тоже не делать мой. Это называется кровью смыть позор. Они мучили его где-то недели две. Потом позвали его родителей, братьев. Те приехали, они сказали ему, вот ваш парень такой-такой. Разберитесь сами или разберемся мы. Они сказали, нет, это наш человек, мы сами с ним разберемся. Забрали его, отвезли в лес, убили. Похоронили там же в лесу. Даже похороны устроили. Если я вернусь домой, меня мои же и убьют.
So obviously that is a harrowing anecdote. He continued to say, we were tortured every day. Beside beatings, we were beaten several times a day with polypropylene tubes. We were tortured with electricity. He goes on to tell about how they were electrocuted and how they would hope that they would pass out so that they wouldn't continue to be electrocuted. I mean, it's just disgusting what they are doing over there. Now, this abuse was first reported in April, which said that about 100 men suspected of being gay were rounded up and tortured, and that at least three were killed. Now, when officials were questioned by human rights groups about these practices, Alvi Kerimov, who is a spokesman for Chechen leader Ramzan Kadyrov, says there are no homosexuals in Chechnya. You cannot detain and persecute those who do not exist. And just to give you guys some background, this is a very conservative region. They are predominantly Muslim and are doing these horrible things. Now, some people, some of the gay men who have escaped this treatment in these camps are going over the Russian border and trying to seek refuge there. Now, the head of the Russian LGBT network says that she is in absolute shock. We have never seen anything like this. And LGBTQ activists who have been meeting with foreign diplomats are pleading that granting a visa to gay survivors of torture could be a matter of saving their lives. Russia, which also has a lot of homophobic sentiments, is their refuge, which shows you how dire the situation is.
Yeah, right. If you want to go to Russia to be treated better, it's messed up. I think we should take them. And I think it's backed by the statement by the travel ban. The initial spirit of the president's travel ban was that we should take refugees. I mean, they did it to accept Syrian Christians, but the justification behind that was that we needed to accept Syrian Christians because they were part of a targeted group within a larger population. So if you're going to hold true to that, President Trump, this is a group within a location that is being prosecuted for, in one case, their beliefs, but in this case, who they are, their sexual proclivities. And I want to hear from the Trump administration on it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think these people are being persecuted and in a lot of really scary ways. So the guy in the video talks about how he was in a car and I guess like he was with a friend and the police just assumed that something was going on with them and arrested them both. There was one situation where a man who was detained, they went through his cell phone and found a number of another man. So then they went after him. There was all these sorts of cases where they're really hunting these people down, oftentimes torturing them to get the names of other gay men in the area. And it's frightening that this is happening in 2017. It's frightening that like we are, you know, having to, like, this is not a story that is taking over, you know, the media. And it should be, because this is terrifying. These people are putting people in detainment camps. I don't know how else, like, this is such a human rights violation that the fact that we're not doing anything as a country is terrifying.
We're talking to Russia about Syria. I don't understand why Russia. We know that the Chechenian president, tyrant, dictator, possible closeted homosexual man is very involved with Vladimir Putin. And why aren't we also lending a hand to the LGBT survivors within that region when why aren't we talking about them at all? And specifically,
because the guy in charge is a strong man, and I respect strong men. He's taken a strong stance. That's what it seems to be. And I'm not by no means am defending it and completely attacking it. One decision that it's very clear that Trump has made is like has he made the decision? Has he made any decision, or did it just like the wind was blowing the right direction when he came up with it?
Maybe they didn't write about this in Breitbart yet.
Yeah, exactly. No, so look, go ahead.
No, you go ahead first.
I don't remember.
Okay, sorry. Look, what I was gonna say is, I think, and I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I think a possible reason why people aren't talking about this within media could be that because Chechnya is a Muslim country, like a Muslim majority country, and this goes back to that whole concept that, you know, Muslims are anti-LGBT, and you know this religion is intolerant to the Western society, like to the Western society's way of living, and the reality is that this whole concept is homophobia. Mm-hmm. They might say that, oh, we need to clear out the country of homosexuality before Ramadan. They might use that. But the reality is it's inherent. It's just homophobia in a less civilized nation. And some might be using religion as a reason to wipe out the homosexuals. But like Brett brought up a really good point. I mean, these guys are Muslim and gay. So why don't we save them?
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think it's like because it's not in the part of the world that we deem like coverable by mainstream media, that they're not covering it in the same way that they would be doing if this was taking place in like England. You know what I mean?
It's also the thing you know about Chechnya from the reports is that there's just Chechen separatists. That's the thing you know about Chechnya. And it's so hard to introduce new kinds of stories when people like know a story about a region and don't really even care about that, to care about more other, you know, kinds of issues. But I mean, the things that they've said, they call it a prophylactic sweep. That same spokesman for the ruler that you quoted before said that their relatives, the gay people's relatives, would send them somewhere from which there's no returning. Like
first he's saying there's no gay people.
And he says, and then he continues to say.
And then he was like, if there were, we're trying to clear them out before Ramadan. First of all, his first statement saying that there are no gay people in the region, like that should be enough of a red flag to human rights activists that like, hey, this country is not accepting, this country is not tolerant, we need to intervene.
And then identifying some of the beginnings of this, like how it all started, you might wonder. One of the reports is that there were like 15 people that wanted to do a gay rights march, and so they applied for permits, and the permits people said don't apply for permits because this doesn't exist. Why, you might as well have a unicorn parade because there's no unicorns in the world. And they were like, we love unicorns. Anyways, but they were like, they continued to file for the permits. They got denied, and they hoped that that would spur the issue up to the EU Human Rights Court. But before that was able to happen, that's when this whole rounding up and their prophylactic.
Yeah, and that's something that happens a lot in Russia as well. I think when they're trying to apply for protests, they get like denied permits and things like that. And
the thing is,
a lot of the gay people in this. Sorry, let me real quick.
Sorry,
a lot of the
ahead.
Gay people in Chechnya say that they are used to sort of this discrimination and used to the way that the government treats them, and so they have only really expressed themselves, who they really are, in private. They often get married and have children and don't tell their families because of the rhetoric from the government officials and I guess just rhetoric in general communities.
And in a part of the world where there's so in a region where there's so much, I don't know how it's exactly called, if it's a country or if it's like a protectorate of Russia, but in that area where corruption is so rampant, if you want to suppress anybody, you just call them gay. And who's to say they aren't? And they get rounded up and sent to
these camps. I was going to say, like, how do you determine whether someone is gay or not? On top of that, especially when the leader Ramzan Kadyrov is very clearly a closeted homosexual. But I can't stress that enough. Ramzan Kadyrov is definitely, without a doubt, a closeted homosexual.
But writing my names on cups just in case they start poisoning you.
Okay. But aside from that, look. I mean, that's crazy that we're living in fear that this person could possibly come and murder like a U.S. political pundit on a.
I said that.
I don't think he's gonna.
Anyway, look. Yeah. But the other point I wanted to make is like, look, when Russia discriminates towards LGBT groups or you know even annexes, I mean, decides that they're going to take over some sort of annexed territory, so we can't really fight back with sanctions, right? It's very difficult because Russia is a massive economic power. We're in a constant proxy. We're in a constant proxy war in Middle East, in the Middle East with Russia. So it's a little bit more difficult. But when it's Chechnya, when it's just a little country, it should be a little bit easier to enforce some sort of humanitarian mission.
But it's within Russia.
Yeah, but it's within Russia. That's really
part. But as you said, it's got to be part of the discussion.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, well, it's very unfortunate. And unfortunately, we're moving on to another story about homophobia. So people are calling for Stephen Colbert to be fired and to have a boycott of his show after he made a homophobic joke about Trump and Putin. Now, during his monologue, Colbert launched into a series of Trump insults that he himself admitted to lacking dignity. And he says, "The only thing your mouth is good for is being Vladimir Putin's cock holster."
Ho, ho, good
and
God.
And he also, during his monologue, posted this picture. All right, so lots of people on Twitter were very upset about some of the rhetoric that he spewed during his monologue. And this man says, "Colbert's homophobic rant was disgusting, and we won't tolerate this anti-LGBTQ behavior. Hashtag file Colbert." Glenn Greenwald says, "Homophobia for the right cause with the right targets is good homophobia, apparently." This man says, "I worked at CBS for 14 years. This is definitely not in keeping with their standards of image." Further, a whole segment was aimed directly at Trump to piss him off. A gay Putin joke has a Trump piss off factor of 100. Colbert knows that. Okay, a few more for you guys. Conservatives last week, Ann Coulter has a right to freely spew her hate speech. Conservatives today, we don't like this joke. And I think that one's really interesting because a lot of these tweets are from conservatives and people who claim to support Trump on Twitter and things like that. This is the last
except
one
for Glenn
here.
Greenwald, who
yeah, except
is,
for Glenn Greenwald. Yeah. The last one here, GOP pretends to be offended by gay joke when they voted for a VP who wants to electrocute gays until they say they are straight.
We've lost.
So I think there I'm curious to hear what you guys think about this.
I mean, yes. When I heard the joke, I was like, that's not very Colbert-y. And I do think that Colbert has gone from a very like set, specific, satirical footing in the Colbert as conservative pundit mockery, where he could get away with more stuff like that. I think that in his current state, when it's just Stephen Colbert,
and his team of writers still.
Right,
obviously.
And his team of writers, and this is one, this seems like the voice of one writer, you know, kind of one out. It seems less easy for me to wrap my head around what he's doing, first of all. And it seems like it is, he has gotten more popular than Fallon by going after Trump. Mm. And so they're continuing to go after Trump.
Did you guys watch the full 12-minute clip
of
his monologue? Yeah, so I was like watching it and I laughed. I thought it was funny. And this is just kind of, I think it's like the last minute of his monologue. And I thought this was like the least funny part of the entire monologue when he did sort of these like short insults that are just sort of like, you know, bang, bang, bang at Trump. And so I don't think it was totally necessary. And while I think,
Just to build on whether it's necessary, the whole concept of the joke was that the CBS Evening News, very straight-laced reporter, was interviewing Trump and was very polite when Trump kind of shut down the interview and went to like reading papers.
And Trump was, and then Colbert was saying,
he said it's defaced the nation or something.
Yeah.
He got a jab in, and then the interviewer,
that was in the beginning of the interview too.
The interviewer took it kindly, and Colbert's like, I'm not gonna take it kindly. I am gonna give you what you deserve. And so I think that builds a little more satirical footing, saying like, I'm giving you back to you. Whether that's okay, it's not great.
I think that part is okay. I do think like, you know, doing like little insults, whatever. He's a comedian, I think that's fine. But I think this is one of those instances where you look at somebody who is a, you know, relatively liberal late night talk show host who is very anti-Trump or whatever it may be, who will still sometimes, I guess, sink to the level of making gay jokes.
So is it a gay joke?
No, but that's, you see, the fact that that's even a matter of debate means that this is not as offensive as people are taking it. But then again, who am I to sit here and tell you you should be offended by this or you shouldn't be offended by this? And honestly, I'm not even kidding. Before I came in here, I was like, this is a little bit crazy that the left is so quick to cannibalize their own media figures for very minor, very minor instances. But then I saw Glenn Greenwald's tweet and I was like, well, if Glenn Greenwald's upset about it, then I'm a little bit more upset about it as well now, because I had talked to all of my gay friends before coming on the show, asking them what they thought about it. And they were all like, I think everyone needs to take a chill pill. It's freaking Stephen Colbert. We know where he stands. This is just one joke.
Yes and no, because here's the thing, is we should hold our own media to the same standards that we hold the opposite side, right? If somebody Fox said this about, and you know, whomever, like we would be up in arms. And so I think we need to hold, you know, regardless of whether they're liberal or conservative or whoever, sinking to the level of making gay jokes is something that we need to move past. I don't think it's funny.
It's ambiguous as to whether the thing is that they're gay or that blowing each other. Blow someone and not be gay is what I'm trying to say. In a very esoteric way.
Yeah, in a vacuum where you're referring to.
What I'm saying is, if this was a man and a woman, that joke would still hold.
Yeah,
it would be harder to make, I think, but that joke would still hold that they're in love with each other.
Then they would say that that's an incredibly sexist joke, though.
Right.
And see, the problem with that is that, and this is a very important argument that we are missing, is that why are we vilifying or demonizing blowjobs? Because blowjobs are great, and I like receiving them. And I think that the more we use blowjobs in our jokes as if it's a power thing, the less likely we will get blowjobs. And I think that is the focus of this argument.
That's
what we should be promoting, is blowjobs are great. You should give them if you want to, you should receive them if you want to. And let's stop discriminating against blowjobs.
So
I'm trying to get ripped to shreds for that.
Right.
I don't think I don't think Colbert should be fired. I don't think he should be boycotted for this. I think it was in poor taste. We are gonna take a quick break and we'll be right back. All right, back on the Young Turks. I have a few announcements and then I'm gonna read some TYT live tweets. The first is that TYTnetwork.com will be offline for maintenance tonight from 10 p.m. till about 4 a.m. Don't freak out. There's going to be like a maintenance sign, and then once it's back up, you can visit it again. Very, very simple.
Best email came from someone here when they saw that, because they said we had to turn it off and turn it back on again.
Yeah.
Someone here emailed the part of Jurassic Park where it's like, hold on to your butts. It's amazing.
All right, let's read some of these TYT live tweets here. The liberal Hoosier says, let's be honest, is anyone really surprised Bannon had a whiteboard?
Good point.
I like it. I like it a lot.
So do we, though.
That is in reference to the story that is coming up later in the show. Mark Tosiello says, Hannah Cranston, I'm not comfortable with no evidence that Brett isn't wearing the same underwear for the third day in a row.
All right. I'll show you. Today it's Hathaway.
That is a reference to a post game that we did on Monday.
Jesus, it's
so that's why
you
should be a member, so you know why we're talking about Brett's underwear. The next one is from S. No Flaky. Says, Stephen at home, obviously Stephen Colbert, has been part of my sanity through all of this. Let's just learn from this and move on, which I think is a great point. So we can move on. Agreed. Just like we are going to do right now with this next story. All right. Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg has announced that they will be hiring 3,000 new employees to help combat violence that people are streaming onto Facebook Live. Now, in a statement, he said that over the last few weeks, we've seen people hurting themselves and others on Facebook, either live or in video posted later. It's heartbreaking, and I've been reflecting on how we can do better for our community. He says that the company will add 3,000 people to its global community operations team to help review the millions of reports we get every week. That is in addition to the 4,500 people already on the team. Now, this comes just weeks after a Cleveland murder was streamed live onto Facebook. And then shortly after that, a man in Thailand posted a video of himself or him killing his 11-month-year-old daughter. And there's so many different cases of people sort of broadcasting these horrendous violent acts onto the site. They are working to create artificial intelligence that can work to prevent some of these acts. But in the meantime, hiring 3,000 people seems like a step in the right direction. What do you guys think?
Mechanical Turks, they're hiring. That's what it is. That's the name of that kind of person who does a job you think is being done by a machine.
Wait, really?
This sounds like the worst. Yeah, Mechanical Turks. It's back from like there was an international expo where someone was like, hey, look at my machine. It does this thing. But it was really just someone inside doing it. It's called it the Mechanical Turk.
That's so interesting.
The worst job ever, this is seems like.
Yeah. Yeah,
if this was your job, you just had to watch. First of all, any Facebook Live, let alone these ones.
Oh, even including this one right now that we're live streaming on Facebook. No, just kidding. This one's
fine because
awesome.
We prepared it.
Yeah.
But the job of going through this over and over again would be such a terrible job. But I'm glad that they're doing it.
Well, let me offer an alternative, right?
Bring it.
So, Mark Zuckerberg says that in a few cases, they've actually been able to stop people from committing suicide. So even though going through and watching all of these Facebook live streams that are being reported would probably be tedious and maybe annoying or something like that, being able to then intervene and stop somebody from committing suicide or committing a violent act would actually be a pretty amazing job to fill, I think.
Right. The idea that people are using some kind of new technology in the furtherance of getting attention for their crimes, mm-hmm. like that has been around for a very long time. And it's not just Facebook Live.
Right.
And it's not, because before that it was television, we talked about on the show once.
Radio?
Radio, sure. I mean, the idea that you're using radio to talk about, make a big spectacle of giant events, War of the Worlds, like all that, like, to inspire pandemonium and get attention for that kind of stuff. It's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Someone was shot on live television. And so it is good that Facebook has taken this input and made a change. And we talked about it too, like Zuckerberg, it doesn't seem like he's a nefarious person. It seems like the number one conflict facing Facebook is their belief. On the one hand, their belief that their technology can solve all these problems and give us another chance, we're getting there really close, and the reality that until you solve it, you still have a big problem. And this is their attempt to make a good faith effort to the population at large to put people there until the AI is strong enough.
Yeah. I actually think it's really important that some of these violent videos do go up on Facebook when you think about some of the obvious like police shootings and things like that have been broadcast, or the aftermath that have been broadcast onto the site, I think
that's
are really,
really
important
point.
Because it gets people to see some of the outrageous things that are happening in this country and around the world and get outraged by it and, I guess, build communities around it so that they can fight against it. So I do think that aspect of it is really important. And so I wonder how the intervening will go, if it's just in terms of censorship, which I think could be dangerous, but if it's intervening so that they can then help help the situation, I do think it could have a really positive impact.
And like you just mentioned, any instance of injustice, the first reaction that people have now is pulling out their phones and either documenting it or sometimes even going on Facebook Live and live streaming it. And you're right, it is really important because in a lot of police shootings, or even in the United Airlines passenger scenario, which was, again, somewhat police brutality involved there as well. Like, that we wouldn't have known about it, and mm-hmm. we wouldn't have been able to react to it. And that's really that is an unintended but great consequence of this new technology, the ability to share this information with the rest of the world immediately and while it's happening.
Right.
So
it's a technology, it's a tool, it's a forum. For the most part, people use it in different ways. But as we talked about on the show yesterday, mm-hmm. there have been situations where Facebook itself has influenced people's outlook on the world, their behavior when they made more negative stories appear. So this is Facebook coming to the realization that in addition to being this forum for people to do whatever they want with it, there is some responsibility that they need to take. And it seems here this is one way they're taking it. We still need to keep holding them responsible.
I want to make one call.
I think they're realizing how influential they are.
I think they knew about it.
Well, yeah, but I think when you...
1.6 billion people a day.
Yeah.
But when you can potentially stop a violent act, or things are spreading like wildfire and changing the way people are protesting and legislation is happening, I do think that is a different effect.
Here's when all of this will actually be potentially devastating or scary. And I'm making this call right now at 4:45, Wednesday, May 3rd, 2017. Mark Zuckerberg will run for president. He's
right
touring
now,
the
he
country.
Said, yeah.
No, he's
oh,
touring
this
the,
next time.
He's already touring the country. He's going to Ford factories. He's. I feel like he might run for president.
Why?
And that. Why not? He's already the most powerful man on the planet.
Yeah. So why run for president?
Yeah. Just because.
Apparently,
he can.
It's a really hard job. says Donald Trump. Let's talk about his daughter, though. Ivanka Trump's second book, Women Who Work, Rewriting the Rules for Success, is receiving some harsh criticism from people for being a little out of touch with the average working American woman, which should surprise nobody. So I would like to walk you through some excerpts from her book and comment on them. All right, so she starts in the introduction of Women Who Work, talking about a trip that she took to Patagonia. She describes a hiking excursion, and she said she seriously had to delve deep into herself before deciding if she wanted to join the family business. I had just decided to leave the Brooklyn-based real estate company Forest City Ratner, my first employer and professional home of the previous 12 months, to take the leap and join our family business. Now, when you are taking a leap to join a multi-million-dollar, multi-billion-dollar, whoever you ask, business, I don't know how much of a leap it is. Then she talks about, she goes back in time. She tells us, takes us back to when she was graduating college, and she got a call from Anna Wintour, who is arguably the most influential woman in fashion. She says, she'd heard I was graduating soon. She knew I liked fashion. She wanted to offer me a job at Vogue. I graciously declined. And so her sentiment here is that she was following her passion of real estate and turning down, like, you know, other opportunities, which also not so in touch there, since she is getting some, like, the most influential woman in fashion is, like, heard she was graduating, like, heard it through the grapevine. Then she talks about how hard it is being a working mother, saying, some of my best photos of the kids were taken by my nanny during the day.
What? Right. Yeah.
Man,
that's
such
so
a
hard
bummer.
Having so
it's
many
just
nannies.
Such a bummer.
You know,
All right, I'm going to read a few more. Now, this is the one that is getting the most attention right now, where she talks about how she switched into survival mode for to join the campaign trail with her father. She goes, I worked and I was with my family. I didn't do much else. Honestly, I wasn't treating myself to a massage or making much time for self-care. I wish I could have awoken early to meditate.
It's just so out of touch.
No, but that's the thing is, like, so many women in America who are doing two jobs or doing however many part-time jobs and just struggling to put food on the table for their family. They're taking their massages, you know, so she's giving inspiration.
That's what
don't
it is.
Don't take those massages,
it's
ladies.
Like, you don't.
Majority of minimum wage is occupied by women, majority of minimum wage jobs, specifically women of color. And this book is probably not for them.
What's, well, in her defense, like if she went with Anna Wintour, she could identify for women what color to wear that season.
Yeah, that's true. But look, what's funny is like I wanted to, I wrote a joke ahead of time for the
It's a great start to a joke.
Yeah, I know. It's like I wrote a joke ahead of time, like I'm doing an open mic right now. No, it's all it's.
What is it?
You ruined it.
You started.
You ruined it.
You were the one who
okay.
don't
okay,
ever
okay,
do
look,
that.
Like, it's almost like when she's like, "Oh guys, oh God!" Like I spilled wine on my cashmere bathrobe when we were on the campaign trail, and I couldn't get it dry cleaned. Like it's super out of touch.
Yes. Is that and joke written down there?
Yes.
Yes, I did. I wrote that. It was not funny, but it was a good
no.
Attempt.
But you're right. Everyone, we're all right. This is all right.
It's all ludicrous. I mean, I think she is so clearly out of touch with the average woman. I mean, you can see that. Through and through with all of her behavior and the way that she talks about how if you follow your passion, you'll find success. That's really not the case for most women in America who are just struggling to make ends meet. I want to read you one of the final quotes that she has in her book where she's trying to be inspirational, I think. She says, "We're training for marathons and learning to code. We're planning adventures with our kids and weekend getaways with our friends. We are defining what it means to be a modern woman who works."
You know who
no
this was
modern
written for?
Woman who works yeah, in this country.
The audience is important.
No, like. she wrote this book because look, she's a New York social elite. Okay, like she's in that high society of New Yorkers that get together and they have power brunches and they have you know happy hour drinks at whatever fancy establishment that they're at and. Anna Wintour is a part of that club, and just like a lot of these other establishment journalists are. So they look up to celebrities like Ivanka, right? And that's part of the reason why the media is always promoting this weird message that, you know, Ivanka is the closeted liberal in Donald Trump's ears. She has so much influence. Are you talking about the John Oliver
segment? Did you see that? That's an amazing
segment.
I wrote
like a very identical one that I couldn't release yet now because John
Oliver
did it before me.
But it's true. It's very true. And you're on to something then where it's like, why the hell do we like Ivanka? Maybe it's this weird, hopeful idea that there is some reason and our inability to believe deep down that there's no hope in that room. But there is no evidence that she has ever been on anyone's side but her own.
Well, I think that this is sort of that moment for a lot of women who are looking at this woman who is a businesswoman, who we are hoping will advance some sort of feminist agenda while in the White House, and to be so removed and to not be a part of intersectional feminism and have no concept of how privileged you are is just sort of really
she's a white feminist.
Making that very concrete.
What's intersectional feminism mean?
It's making sure that you include all women of color and you include all different like socioeconomic backgrounds in your discussion of feminism. So like even the highly quoted quote about how much you make to the dollar, like the 80 cent, the average woman makes 80 cents to the dollar. Even that is sort of being a white feminist statement because
womenist,
because
we should call it.
Really good.
Women of color make even less. So the average black woman makes 56 cents to the average male dollar. So
that sucks.
But you guys, yeah, and
there's a way.
More inclusive
there's a way that
her.
She can write a book. Like I'm not saying that just because she's Ivanka Trump and Donald's her dad, she can't write a book that reaches out to
and
everyone.
Her daddy.
This just doesn't seem to be the way to do it. And complaining like, oh, I'm spending too much time with you know away from my kids. That's one thing because I'm working.
Yeah.
It's my nanny. Not getting massages? Come on.
Yeah,
and look, there's a way
reality.
This book could have been interesting as well if she talked about how weird her dad was when she was growing up and why he consistently sexualizes her on national television as if that's normal.
I'm actually writing a book about it.
Whether
myself.
She actually did say, this is an insensitive thing I'm about to say, whether she actually did quote, and I quote Ivanka here, allegedly, mulatto penis. I'd like to try that. Like, I would want to know if she's, like, I want to know the real Ivanka Trump, not the fake one that constantly gives these very political answers to all of these questions without really answering whether or not she is a liberal or a conservative. And the other thing is, like, she is a fascinating individual, and fascinating individuals write books all the time. But she's a fascinating individual that was trying to, this was an attempt where she was like, we're working women, we're all in this together, and she did it in a really
I think your last point is important, right? I think she could have approached this. I don't think that we should like be like, oh no, you can't write a book because you've had all this privilege. I think she had an opportunity and where she could have written a book that recognized her privilege and then spoke about how she used that privilege and used the finances that she had available to then advance her career to a different level in the ways that she did so with a little bit more humility and a little bit more recognition of the circumstances that most women in America have to endure to really just put food on their family's table. All right, let's do one more story real quick. As promised, a fun Steve Bannon one. So Steve Bannon took a selfie with a guest in the White House, and unfortunately, the selfie revealed his master plan on a whiteboard behind them. Now, this is a selfie with Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, okay? And so, apparently, Steve Bannon has this infamous whiteboard in his office where he writes down all of the campaign promises that they made on the trail, as well as just general things that they would like to happen while in the White House. Now, you can see a little bit closer in a photo here of some of the things. Now, if you can't read that because you're watching on a computer or you're blind like me, here are some of the things that this whiteboard says. It says, repeal and replace Obamacare, eliminate the estate tax, sunset our visa laws so that Congress is forced to revise and revisit them, suspend immigration from terror-prone regions, triple the number of ICE agents, build the border wall, and eventually make Mexico. And you can see in that second picture that it says pay for it, and then suspend the Syrian refugee program. So apparently what he does, he writes all this stuff down, and you can see in the picture just behind us, they check it off when they have achieved it.
And catch and release, that's for fishing. That's just for fishing.
Yeah, no, Steve Bannon loves fishing.
When he catches a fish, Steve Bannon bites the head off right there and holds it up.
I'm reading it.
Blood sacrifice and then throws it and then throws it in.
He has really terrible handwriting. That's the first thing I thought about.
He eats it just like Smeagol. That's what I want to
say. Okay,
so let's...
This is a fun story about Steve Bannon.
I want to bring attention to the fact that all of these are awful, right, and will affect the lives of a million people. But also, like, how dumb are you?
Staged. 100% staged. There's no way this is an accident. It's 100 days. He's getting so much criticism for not accomplishing anything. Trump releases a 100-day ad about how awesome it is. And then at the end of the day, he just wants you to look and see how many things are checked off on his list.
1,000%.
And then let's talk about what gets to get checked off on your list. Ending immigration from terrorism-prone countries. You tried. It failed. It still gets a check.
Should it be an X on top of the check?
Well,
like maybe
like
they
me.
When they first signed off on the executive order, they were like, oh, check, and then they should cross it off, cross
off
the check.
Yeah, that's like me saying, like, become an NBA superstar and giving it a check because I started trying when I was 19.
So
I never got there.
That was really good.
You think this was completely purposeful?
100%.
Come on, Steve Bannon doesn't take a shit without thinking about it through. And also the fact that—
Thanks for making me think about Steve Bannon taking a shit,
he looks like shit. Anyway, whatever. Even the fact that this is a photo with a rabbi.
The main
problem with Steve Bannon in office right now, and there's a million different ones, but the real problem is, I think, H.R. McMaster, and on top of that, but more importantly, Jared Kushner, and how he doesn't like Steve Bannon. This is all like inner White House chatter that blogs like Politico will frequently cover, and I apologize for mentioning it on this show, but that's like something that, you know, D.C. elite love to talk about. And that's a big part of the reason why Steve Bannon's alleged anti-Semitism, or very obvious anti-Semitism, when you look at, you know, previous records.
Okay, you guys have convinced me.
The actual boxes checked are get people to know that I've done a lot of stuff.
Yeah, that was right behind him. You can't see it.
Get people to know that I hang out with Jews.
You know what's really funny is that the release from the divorce filings where he said, where that whole like anti-Semitism thing sprung from, where it says, like, oh, I don't want my kids going to this school with like whiny Jewish kids. Yeah. That was my high school.
Yeah, it was.
Damn. Well, no, but look, if you look closely,
right,
can we
here.
Pull the photo back up? Is that possible? Do I have the power to do that? Or
yeah,
do you have
go
to
for
say
it. It? Number
can
two,
we pull the second photo
graphic?
With like the, no, not that one. The one where, well, that one also works. But
the other one.
Look at his face. Look at it. He's just like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm deeply saddened by this.
He does.
By
our,
oh.
He yeah. is. Vincent
he looks like he's in so much pain.
He just looks like he's
clearly is a sad soul. And I agree with you guys that this was probably purposeful. Let us know what you think, and we'll see you guys soon.
Bye-bye. Oh, shit.